There are two words in the Bible that stand out above all others in importance. Grace, faith. Now, this is not my observation. Just read the Bible. Everything that Jesus attempted to do in the world was contingent upon the faith of those to whom he was speaking, to whom he was ministering. When he went to his hometown early in his ministry, the writer says he could do nothing for them because of their lack of faith. And when there was a miraculous healing, many times the observation was made, your faith has made you whole. Faith is our response to God. Without that response, God cannot funnel into our lives the blessings and the riches that he has for us. When Martin Luther was trying to find a faith to live by within a church that he felt had built walls, it was while in his study and he came upon the letter of Paul in which he said, the just shall live by faith. And he shouted, Eureka, that's it. You cannot earn God's pleasure. You cannot attain God's blessings through works. It is purely through faith. Faith is the greatest power on earth. And sadly, one of the least used sources by which we enrich our own lives. Grace, of course, is God's gift to us, especially as we realize at this time of the year in the coming of Christ, grace came through Christ into the world to accomplish what nothing else could, particularly the law. But grace is contingent upon faith. And so as we begin this new unit, looking toward Christmas, it's most appropriate that our first lesson has to do with that great man of faith, thought by many as the greatest man of faith. When the writer of the letter to Hebrew was trying to exemplify faith in a manner that was most noteworthy, he used Abraham as an example. By faith, Abraham accomplished these things, only through faith. So our lesson today is faith as revealed in Abraham. Abraham is the one through whom faith first is revealed in the Bible, the Old Testament. The Bible tells of everything that occurred from the Garden of Eden down to the time of Abraham. Covers the flood, covers the building of the Tower of Babel, the many incidents that are generic. All of these events took place, but not among any particular people. It was to all the world. All of God's creation was one unit. No separation. Everything was generic up until the time of Abraham. And then with Abraham comes a family religion. God speaks individually to one person, and he says to that person, I will bless your descendants. They will be special to me. They will be my chosen. And all of the blessings that I have will be channeled through your generations to come. You will be my people. So for the first time in the Bible, religion becomes a representation of God through an individual person or groups of persons, personalizing it and ministering to those who are in a covenant relationship with him. Abraham was the one God chose. Prior to the time of Abraham, religion wasn't known in the way in which Abraham was to perceive it. If you go back to prehistoric times, you'll find that animism is primarily the way in which people worship. As I said last week or the week before, every social group from the beginning has had a deity upon which they are reliant. And if they could not identify a deity from others, they created their own. One great French philosopher said, we must have a god to worship, or in the absence of a god, create one for ourselves in order to preserve our sanity. So from the very beginning, every social group has had a god whom they worship. And in the beginning, it was nothing more than animism. That is, a god in the breeze, in the trees, in the rocks, in the water, in the inanimate objects of the world. Each had a spirit that manifested to the individual spiritual powers. The Native Americans had the great spirits, which they worshiped, the spirits of nature. And then pantheism came after animism, which meant that there were many gods of many faces, many ways in which they were represented. Every family had a god, and it was usually different from the gods of anyone else. Abraham's father was a maker of idols because there were many gods. And there's a story that the Hebrews tell, and they claim that it's true. It's not supposed to be simply a fantasy or imagination. The father of Abraham made idols. That was his livelihood. Abraham sensed that there's only one God. He is the first individual in the Bible to whom it is attributed God revealed himself as one person. This is the beginning of monotheism in the Bible. More fully revealed to the Hebrews as they came out of Egypt through Moses, but it's revealed to Abraham. One day, Abraham's father went out where he was building his idols, and he left his son Abram in charge. Abraham looked upon all of these idols on display, and he picked up a hammer and he proceeded to crush each idol except for the largest idol. And then he placed the hammer in the hand of the idol that was left. And when the father came back, he was perturbed over what he had discovered, and he said, what in the world has happened? I left you in charge. And he said, well, the big idol smashed all the other idols, leaving only himself. And Abraham's father said, you expect me to believe that? That idol can't move. That idol can't do what you said he did. And Abraham said, then why do you worship him? This is held to be truth by the Hebrews, and I'm not going to be one to dispel it because I like it too well. But Abraham left the Ur of the Chaldees as a young man with his father, with his brother, his wife, and his nephew Lot. Went about 600 miles up the Euphrates River. Their journey originated south of Baghdad at upon the banks of the Euphrates River, and they just went northward about 600 miles and settled in Haran. And it was there that God spoke to Abraham, and this is one of the most significant moments of all biblical history. Everything prior to this, God spoke generally, not identifying himself, simply speaking in terms of the circumstances that existed in the world. Now, God spoke one-on-one to Abraham, and he said, I want you to leave this place, and I want you to go out into a place where I will guide you to go. And there I want you to establish a nation. Your descendants will be my people, and I will bless them and their generations to come, and we will be in a covenant relationship. What would your reaction be if you were a single person to whom God spoke, knowing nothing at all about God, knowing nothing at all about the religion that was to ensue from that moment onward, and obey a voice that said, leave the place where you're comfortable, where you're established, your kinsmen, leave it all behind and go out into a place and you don't even know where it is you're going. Simply go. And from there, we'll take it step by step. And this is the point at which the writer of the letter to Hebrews makes to the point. In faith, Abraham left the land that he was accustomed to, left his family, and went out into the unknown. It is on the faith of Abraham that the Hebrew religion could be built. But there were many evidences of Abraham's faith. It wasn't simply leaving the homeland where he was comfortable and where he was established. From time to time, he was faced with problems that seemed to be insurmountable. It was his faith that allowed him to overcome them and to move on from there. The greatest evidence of that faith was when his son Isaac went with him to the top of the mountain where God had directed him to go and had instructed him to offer his son as an expression of his faith and love in God. Now, I can't imagine anything in all of literature that is more challenging than that one incident. It's always been a problem to me. I've always had to wrestle with it in one way or another to try to find some reasoning behind all of this. But this is what Abraham heard God say, and this was what his response was. The one thing upon which the future depended was to be sacrificed upon an altar. For you see, Isaac was Abraham's only son. Now, he had Ishmael. Ishmael was born from the handmaiden of his wife, Sarah, who later became Sarah. But when Sarah could not conceive, and she was getting to be 90 years old, and she knew that she wasn't going to be able to conceive, she said to her handmaiden, "We've got to honor what God said he was going to do through Abraham. So I'm going to let you become his wife for a short time." Excuse me. Of all these doctors in here, surely somebody's got a cough drop. Abraham made a number of mistakes. Wasn't a perfect man. And that within itself is a lesson to us all. Went down into Egypt because of the famine in Canaan. And that was where all the food was. Sarah was a beautiful woman. That's how she's described in the Bible, a beautiful woman. And he knew that the Pharaoh, the minute he saw his wife, was going to lust for her. And he might kill Abraham in order to get his wife. So he said, "I want you to meet my beautiful sister." And the Pharaoh was so impressed by her beauty, he invited her to come into his home. And she left. Yeah. This was Abraham's intimate. God spoke to the Pharaoh and said, "Don't you touch that woman. That's Abraham's wife." And so the Pharaoh came to Abraham and said, "What do you mean, passing your wife off as your sister? Don't you know that I will have the gods angry at me?" And Abraham told the truth. He said, "She is my sister." In truth, she was. She was Abraham's half-sister. So he hadn't lied about her being his sister, but it was a very nice gesture on his part to use her in order to secure his own safety. But that was one of the few things about Abraham that he's to be chastised for. Above that, he seemed to live a perfect life, a man of peace. Only one incident where he went to war, and that was to protect his nephew Lot when he had been abducted. He went to every length to prevent conflict with those about him. He was a man of peace and of compassion. So God found in him the traits that he needed in order to establish a nation. And he said to him, in the promise of a son, Ishmael having come through Hagar, the handmaiden of Sarah, but the one through whom the promised kingdom would come was Isaac himself. Two sons of Abraham, both legitimate, both were sired by Abraham, both were sons of Abraham, one Ishmael and one Isaac. God said to each, "I will make of your descendants a great nation." Now we know all about the Hebrew nation that came through Isaac and Jacob and his 12 sons, which is the true Hebrew nation. And throughout the Old Testament, everything that is written about God in relationship to humanity is in the Hebrew nation. Everyone else is on the outside. It's the Hebrew nation. Ishmael is the father of the Arab world. And it was to Ishmael that God said, well, I will bless your nation. We have the religion of Islam and the Hebrew religion. Constantly at odds in the Middle East, and it will be that way. I can't see any incident whereby the two would become reconciled. Descendants of the two sons, both of whom God blessed. And I think that when we tend to build animosity toward the Muslim religion, we need to remember that God said to Ishmael, I will bless your nation. Not favored, not the chosen, but blessed. With Christ, all nations came together into one, no longer a favored nation, a favored world. The gospel through Christ is a gospel given to Abraham, but now for the entire world, and not just for one particular descendant of Abraham. Abraham lived a full and long life, lived to be 175, became a father to the age of 99. He spent his entire life in the manner in which God called him to go into the land, to occupy it, to bless the land with the way in which he cared for the land. And he becomes the father of the Hebrew faith, the father of the Muslim faith, and through the Hebrew faith, the father of the Christian faith. So as we anticipate the coming of Christ at Christmas, we start at the very beginning, the one through whom God first spoke of his love and compassion and his willingness to reclaim that which he had created in a covenant relationship, the final covenant being the covenant with Christ, the covenant of grace. Abraham is representative of what God meant for his children to be. In every instance, Abraham acted in faith when God called. If he questioned it, he questioned it in his heart, not in debate. He did the will of God. And by that, God was able to penetrate the world of darkness and sin and eventually create his kingdom on earth through Christ. What a magnificent beginning. As we emphasize such people as Moses and Elijah and Isaiah and Jeremiah and John the Baptist and others, the father of us all was a man who stepped out in faith, honored God's call, and set the pace of the establishment of the kingdom on earth. Any comments or questions on this one? I was going to mention that. I said he had two sons. He had a passel of kids. And they were honorably born as well, because after the death of Sarah, he did take another wife, and he had children by that. But God's covenant was only through Isaac. And all the others, of course, had descendants who became nations. And the most noted one is Ishmael, because it is a part of the original covenant, but it is only through Isaac and Jacob and the 12 tribes that the chosen people were set apart from the rest of the world. But you're right, he did remarry and had other children, and they were blessed too, I'm sure. Abraham bought a cave in which to bury his wife, and he and many of his descendants were buried there together. Sacred shrine today for Hebrews and Muslims alike. Any other comment? Yes?
Can you say, credited Abraham, the first man who said, God is the only God.
Everyone at the time of Abraham, all nations had numerous gods. You remember when Rebecca, or Rachel, my wife, Rachel left her father, she stole his gods and put them in their saddlebags and took them with her. Most every family had individual gods. God revealed himself to Abraham as the monotheistic God, but it wasn't established firmly until Moses on Mount Sinai encountered God, and God said, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. I am Yahweh. And that is the establishment of the fact that there is only one God, all other gods are. So Abraham is one to whom God revealed his monotheistic nature, but there continued to be other gods and other cultures. But it was through Moses then that was established, I am the only God, you have no other God before me, you will make no graven images, disputing all the ways in which people have been worshiping Christ through that. Thank you for that question.